This is the Elevate Podcast, where we have conversations to elevate your health, relationships, and soul. I'm Amanda Nogar. I'm a yoga and Ayurveda practitioner, and each week I'm joined by my co-host, holistic health coach, Sarah Hopkins. So let's dive in to this week's episode. Okay, so hi everybody. Welcome back to the Elevate Podcast. It's Amanda here. And today we're talking about social media. I feel like it's a very timely topic since, you know, over the last 12 months, I think probably everyone in the world has been on social media more than ever. And it's kind of just growing exponentially, the way that it's like infiltrated our lives over the last like really 15 years or so. I mean, of course, there was platforms around before that. I mean, I think MySpace came out. Yeah, MySpace. But that was a totally different beast to compared to what we're dealing with now.
Just as you're talking, what year Facebook sort of emerged?
Facebook launched in 2004. And the only reason I know this is because I was dating a guy who went to Harvard, and at the time it was super exciting and this time of real innocence of being able to connect with friends. At first it was just within Harvard, and then it expanded to be with a college on the East Coast as well. And it was just really genuine. And I feel like we have to remember that there's no one evil entity in this. There's no one enemy. I truly believe the original intention of Facebook, and probably the other platforms as well, like Twitter, was pretty, yeah, genuine. I think it was genuinely about connection. And of course, it's grown to be something quite different. But I guess just to like put some parameters around what we're talking about today is we're talking about all the websites, social media that help us to create our own content and share content with our peers. It's like peer-to-peer social networking. When we think back to the days of like MSN Messenger and MySpace, it's just so, so different now to the level of sophistication that the platforms have grown into. And do you remember this in the Social Dilemma? There was a line, it's like, the only other industry that refers to their clients or customers as users is the illicit drug trade.
Oh my God, no, I don't, but it's very appropriate.
So we are users, and today we're going to unpack all of the different ways in which social media has affected and is continuing to affect our health, our relationships and soul, and the way that we, Sarah and I, both navigate using social media and, yeah, everything in between. So what are your first memories of social media? How did it come into your world?
Well, I think I transitioned. An acquaintance of mine sort of got me onto MySpace. So it must have been, you know, prior to the year that Facebook started. And then I remember sort of transitioning some of my content over onto Facebook around those. I think I was quite an early adopter. I think I was on the platform relatively early. But I mean, I think that I started interacting with socials a lot more when I started my business. So 2000 and maybe for the year prior to that. So I started my business in 2012. So probably around maybe 2010 and 2011, I started using Instagram a lot more. And I always found myself a lot more compelled by Instagram than I ever did with Facebook. And I think, but I remember those days, those early days of particularly Instagram with real fondness. Like I loved it. I loved the innocence associated with literally using the actual app to take a photo and then just posting it with one sentence, you know, or one word or a hashtag, you know, and the fun. Yeah, the fun around that. And like I said, the innocence and the lack of pretension and sort of falseness that I think has accumulated, certainly in my perception of it over time. And so if I think broadly about my experience with social media, over the years, it has grown from something that was fun and something that I loved to do that was sort of visually stimulating and a way to connect with others to something that was really helpful for my business to something that to something that is pervasive and an annoying necessity and something that I feel affects my physiology and my psychology. And I think that the moment where I think that realization was crystallized was, well, actually, no, sorry. I think the moment that there was a crystallization of that en masse was last year when everybody sat down in the month of September or October, whenever it was, and watched The Social Dilemma.
And yeah, I think, it had such a huge impact, didn't it?
And I think that for me, you know, I'm not trying to say that I am some sort of, you know, genius sort of forward thinker. For me, I already knew all of those things. And I think obviously a lot of other people did too. But I loved the fact that it brought it, it did bring the problems with social media really into the forefront of everybody's mind and made everybody reflect on it.
Yeah. And I think what's important to remember is that social media, and I guess the internet at large, is really just a direct reflection of where we are at as humanity. Like I said before, there's not a single enemy here. Like, Facebook isn't the enemy. This is something that we need to look at within ourselves, which is why I think it's something important for us to discuss. It really, I see it as an amplifier, meaning like it's revealing to us what's already there, what's already within us, just on a like bigger and a brighter scale than what we've ever seen before. And it's forcing us to like look at our shit, look at the places where we're not being authentic, look at the places where we're triggered. And yeah, I think that's, it can be a good thing, you know, if we use it in that way, it can be a teacher in a way.
I'm gonna disagree with you. Just, I think that I agree with you that, you know, it meets us where we are and it reflects back to us, you know, the shadow and the light. But the problem is, and like you said, it's probably systemic. It's not like one evil technocrat sitting at the top like Dr. Evil, you know, with his mini-me, he's just laughing down at everybody. But, you know, the problem is that the way that the different platforms have created the artificial intelligence that writes the algorithms that predict and deliver to us what they know based on understanding more and more of us,
our data. You know,
by understanding our data and delivering us content that will make us spend longer on them, that's whether accidental, instrumental, or a combination of both, that's sort of out of our control. And I think The Social Dilemma was a great sort of light shiner of that fact to all of us. But the problem is that most of us have forgotten and are still just like staring, you know, staring longingly at our phones for like, you know, 12 hours a day for most people. I think,
well, the way that it's built is intended to be addictive.
That's right. And intended to be so utterly compelling. And like the makers of The Social Dilemma said, they're not actually competing with other platforms. They're just competing for your undivided attention. You know, like they just want you to spend as much possible time staring at that particular platform as possible. In fact, I think one of the makers of The Social Dilemma was saying that the only platform, I think he was working for, was it Facebook or Instagram? I can't remember. And he said the only one that they were competing with is YouTube, because YouTube has the longest time
spent.
That's right. So it's really all about, it's about keeping us sucked in. And I don't know if we have agency around that.
I totally disagree. I think that is a cop out, basically. Yes, these platforms are insanely intelligent, more intelligent than what we can even comprehend, especially when it comes to the algorithms and the AI and all of that. It's progressing quicker than what us laymen can keep up with. And even as admitted in The Social Dilemma, what the the inventors of these systems, what they can even keep up with, or, you know, several of them also admitted, like, they are also addicted to their email, they're addicted to their own platforms and are writing themselves code so that they are getting blocked, you know. But I think that is part of our human experience right now. And to say, like, oh, we don't have control, we don't have agency, I just think that's bullshit. You do. I really do. And people have always had addictions, but now it's just more sophisticated and, like I said, more intelligent than, like, maybe the addiction of gambling in the past, like on the pokies machines, or, you know, being addicted to drinking at the pub for hours and hours and hours. Like, people have always succumbed to whatever addicting forces are in their environment. But I think we need to, more than ever, take responsibility for how we're using our own time. Like, as you're explaining, the attention economy and time spent is the way that these platforms are, you know, made to work. But it's even kind of more, like, refined than that. It's not just that they want our time or our attention, but it's the very subtle change in our behavior that happens when we're spending that much time in the app. And it's not just our behavior within the app that changes, it's our behavior outside in the world and in the way that we purchase, the way that we relate to one another, the way that we think about ourselves. All of those factors are what is being competed for. And yeah, I know it's not easy, but it's necessary for us to really look at it. Look at our addiction. This is an addiction.
100%. I do agree with that. And I think the good that has come from that particular documentary is that it has spawned all of these social enterprises, if that's what they are, you know, conscientious businesses that are creating new platforms and creating things to help us to mitigate against all of the sort of tricks, for want of a better word, that all of these platforms use to, you know, capitalize on that economy of time that you were talking about. So, but I think we need to stay. I think the documentary was, however long it was, 1 to 2 hours, that shocked everybody and modified behaviors for a week or 10 days, you know, when everybody was like a lot of my friends were like, that's it. I'm not on Instagram anymore. And now I see they're all on Instagram all the time doing, you know, liking, commenting, they're there constantly. And so, you know, it had a momentary positive impact. And then, you know, the pull of the blue light was, you know, too strong. And so it's maintaining vigilance and using knowledge and awareness to, like you said, take responsibility for our behaviors around all of these platforms.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think that the platforms should also be held accountable because they are specifically designing these products that are having an adverse effect on everybody's health, mental and physical health. And so, yeah, they need to, you know, have some ethics put in place, which I don't think are there right now. But at the same time, we can't wait for that. As consumers or users of these platforms, we can't wait for them to start, just like, you know, the same kind of thing with plastic. We can't just wait for these massive companies to stop producing plastic. It's up to us to do what we can do right now to take responsibility for the things that we consume, including social media.
That's a good time to drop the example, which I'm sure people remember, or actually probably don't remember. I was reminded of it when I was listening to one of the makers of the documentary be interviewed by Joe Rogan, and he was saying that, and maybe it will segue into a bit of a conversation about the future generations and how they will need to navigate this sort of minefield. But he was saying that, so a teenage girl, if she looks on YouTube or maybe even Facebook, if she searches for diet, but let's use YouTube, she searches for a diet video, anything about dieting, which obviously a lot of teenage girls would do, the next recommended video for her is likely to be like anorexic content. So Thinspo and that sort of stuff, which leads down into, and the reason that the algorithm, and apparently they've sort of changed this now, but the reason that the algorithm did that was because those videos are really compelling, and it wants you, if you're looking at one thing, it wants to draw you in further by giving you something that's even more compelling that's associated with that. So it was by design, but sort of accidental. And I mean,
and that goes across many different topics, because we kind of get used to like the hit of whatever like dopamine is released. And so we need like a more extreme version of that to get the same hit or to get that same like addictive satisfaction. And it goes across like so many different genres, not only online, but in person as well. Like in real life as well. That's just like how our brain kind of works, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. So should we sort of talk about the impacts in terms of health, relationships and soul as we see them, and then we can sort of expand out again and sort of share some of the things that we personally do? This like health, I think it's good to actually really think about some of the realistic, because I think when we talk about social media, well, I don't know what you think, but I when I think about it and when I sort of do have those broad conversations about it, it's about sort of bullying and polarization. And I definitely want to talk about those things and the dangers with, the shadowy corners of parts of social media,
extremist internet.
Yeah, exactly, all of that stuff. But you know, there are some real physiological downfalls of being glued to the phone that I think is not, it wasn't covered in the social dilemma, and is something that I don't think people are as conscious of as they really need to be. So obviously you've already talked about dopamine, and you know, it's like, you know, that is a problem because it makes you want more. So that's, you know, that can be problematic in terms of your psychological health, I suppose, in terms of being addicted to something, which, you know, I know myself. I find myself like in moments of stillness, sort of having a twitching hand, like, where's my phone? I need it to put something on. I'm not immune to this stuff. But I think, you know, some of the more or lesser known physical side effects are macro degeneration, like the problems that we are having as a sort of global population, or certainly populations that are sort of working inside and staring at screens and then staring at their phones for like probably 18 hours a day. We have like epidemic levels of macro degeneration. And that's because we're constantly staring at a blue screen. We're constantly, our eyes are exposed to short distance blue light only. And they're meant to get such a variation of distances that they're looking at. So the eyes are meant to see up really close and then far, far away and looking over far distances and everything in between. They're meant to see blue and green light in the morning and then red and yellow in the evening and then none really, or just red in the evening. And they're just not, they're not getting that. And so it's one of those things that is sort of like people aren't making, like only people in the blue light protection industries are making the connection. Like everyone else is like, oh no, you know, like blue light isn't the main reason why we have epidemic levels of macro degeneration. Although all optometrists, did I say macro? macular degeneration. Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, that's a real physiological side effect that a lot of people aren't even aware of, that they're damaging their eyes. And actually, I have a good friend whose son was spending quite a lot of time. He's the same age as Raph. He was spending quite a lot of time on the iPad, and he was having problems with his vision. So he's not even five. And they took him to the optometrist, and the optometrist said he's actually like ruining his eyes from spending so much time on the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like coming back to what I know you want to cover is what are we setting up for our children if we're like plonking them down in front of an iPad for hours on end at a really young age when their eyes are still developing?
Mm.
So, and I mean, that's just one. I mean, also,
could you give us maybe like a basic breakdown on the way that it affects our hormonal health? Because you're good at that.
Yeah, well, yes, hormones is another one. Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm the best person to give that description, but basically, if we are not protecting our eyes while we're staring at that screen, then every time that light goes into our eyes, that blue light, it tells our retina to tell our adrenals to produce cortisol. And cortisol suppresses our sex hormones over time. So
cortisol, the stress hormone.
Yes, cortisol, the stress hormone. So we're not meant to be producing cortisol all day. And that cortisol is what suppresses our melatonin in the evening. And that's why all of the guidelines, including, you know, conventional guidelines, say to limit screen times. But I mean, that's not enough. We really should be protecting our eyes from the blue light of the screen from midday onwards, and we're just not doing that, you know. And so high levels of cortisol can have negative impacts on the balance of estrogen and progesterone and many other hormones in the body, actually, like I said, melatonin as well. So yes, it's definitely not good for our hormones. And, you know, we have an epidemic of hormonal imbalance. I don't think I've ever seen a single female client that doesn't have hormonal imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, add to the list of all the other things in our environment that might be triggering hormonal environment, but add this, the, you know, 6 hours you're scrolling Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever it might be, to that list.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one I want to talk about before maybe you add something is spinal health. Mm. Because when I look around at people like walking, standing at the bus stop, standing in line, standing at the shops, everybody is head down, neck craned over, looking at their phone. Mm. And basically, that posture, that position is a really unhealthy and chronic, because we're doing it all day, position for our cervical spine to be in. And it's also engaging or involving, and I'm not a chiropractor, physio, or, you know, some sort of musculoskeletal expert, so please don't take this as that, but it's involving that mid spine as well, that thoracic spine, that hunched over look that you see, you know, it's exacerbating that. And that is, that posture alone can also activate our stress hormone response, but it's already activated from staring at the phone, but it's creating postural imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a physiological regression. Like, you know, we're going back.
Totally. Oh my God. I never thought of that. Because when you think of that image of like, you know, the development of the Homo sapiens.
I know, it's, to upright.
Yeah,
we're going like hunching backwards. Back over. We are.
Oh, dear.
We're regressing on so many levels. So, you know, just
hashtag do your yoga.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I always get people to lie on a thoracic foam roller to open that thoracic area. Like, it's the same as all the heart opening positions.
Mm.
So, I mean, there's many more, but I think it's good to sometimes talk about some of those really concrete physiological symptoms that we are.
Yeah, because even if you're not, you know, feeling super addicted to the nature of social media, even, you know, maybe you don't enjoy that too much, or maybe you're not venturing into those extremist, you know, parts of the internet or parts of social media that really do like suck up time like crazy. If you're using the platforms at all, we're getting, like you said, all of those physiological effects, and we're also getting all of our data sucked up, all of our information, which, you know, on a surface level might think, oh, I haven't got anything to hide. It doesn't really matter, does it? Like, you know, oh, that means I get served the ads that, you know, are relevant to me. Maybe it's helpful. But even if you feel like you don't have anything to hide, there's so many aspects of that that are problematic. Going back to the whole idea that it's not just our time and attention that they want or that they profit from, but it's the subtle changes in our behavior that we don't even notice happening on like such a small incremental level day by day, week by week.
Definitely. And if we sort of swing, or do you have anything else to say about health before I swing into some relationship stuff? Swing. So what do you think about the impact that social media is having on our relationships?
Well, I think first of all, we always need to look at the relationship to ourselves first, because whatever's going on internally is what's going to be projected out to our relationships with other people. And you know, my personal experience with social media has always been work related. I've never had personal accounts on Facebook, anything like that. So it's hard to kind of, and of course my work is so intertwined with my personal identity, but yeah, it's hard for me to imagine how it would have been different if it was personal accounts, especially like if I was a teenager at the time when I got on. I think there's so much embedded in our self-worth and our identity stuff when it comes to social media that it's profoundly changed the way we relate to ourselves, you know, our self-worth, our self-value. We've been conditioned over the last 15 years to be in this like social approval economy in a way. Like we've been wired to seek the approval of our tribe. And that's always been the case. But, you know, back in the day, we were living in a community of like 70 to 120 people. And it was important to have their approval to some degree. But now we're seeking the approval of hundreds to maybe thousands of people. And we just are not built to handle that. It's just insane to think about, you know, the impact that that's having on our self-worth. I think it's like the biggest thing to kind of unpack. And then, of course, you know, the levels of anxiety and depression going through the roof, we kind of feels like we're touching on that almost every episode because it is seeping into every aspect of our life. But it's undeniable the impact that these platforms are having on our physical and mental health. And go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, I was thinking about, again, the conversation that Tristan Harris was having with Joe Rogan, and I'm sure it's also part of the social dilemma about, is it called a negativity bias? So as humans, we are set up to, despite you know, hearing, if we hear 100 positive comments and one negative comment, we will like ruminate and focus on that negative comment. And so, and I know myself that I have experienced this before where I have, you know, posted something and had, you know, the usual sort of complimentary, you know, pleasant, adoring, whatever, like commentary from various people. And it could be a photo of me or it could be, you know, just a photo related to me and my business, because mostly my social media interaction is also business related. But again, the business and personal are intertwined. And I'll get one person on the odd occasion saying something negative or critical, and it will send me, you know, into, you know, I have been into like a really dark place. Like I, you know, remember I got trolled over, I mean, this is so ridiculous, but I really did get offended by this person for like excluding gluten from my son's diet.
Oh my God.
I know. And the lady actually went crazy on Facebook and she started like attacking all of my followers that were like defending me and giving her a hard time, like screaming, basically, like literally screaming like obscenities at them. And yeah, and telling them like they were F heads and all sorts of revolting things. It was weird. But I remember spending so much time and like ruminating over it and being so offended by it. And you know, there were so many other beautiful, kind, you know, comments on that particular post. And then there was all the supportive sort of feedback that everybody else had provided, but it's still, it was that comment that, you know, took up all of my headspace and time.
Mm.
And so, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, obviously that is something that's having an impact en masse, especially with younger adults and adolescents who are more vulnerable and more fragile in terms of their self-identification and relationship with their own self-worth.
Mm. And of course, it's much easier to drop a nasty comment anonymously or yes. like with the protection of a screen between you than you would in person. Like, yes. you know, in our, back in our day, if someone said something nasty to you at school, like,
they said it to your face.
You'd have to hash it out face to face.
Yes. And
that's,
you know,
probably got some benefit in it, you know, having to resolve a conflict. But, I mean, of course, we're not, I'm not trying to, like, advocate for bullying, of course not. But
no.
It's just so, so different when it's online and, yeah, yes. with the protection of a screen. And, I mean, the bullying that goes on, the rates of suicide in teen girls, the rates of, yeah, again, anxiety and depression in teen girls. This is a real epidemic.
Hey, it's Amanda, and I'm here to fill you in on where to go to get started on living your best life yet. Paths to You is my online membership where I weave together the teachings of yoga and Ayurveda to guide you back to your true nature, your best self. It's the most affordable way to receive all of my online workshops. There's everything from detoxing and doshas, sleep and sex, women's cycles, and the corresponding yoga practices that go alongside the information shared so that you can truly embody your unique expression of health and vibrancy. There's also a really special 40-day path included that walks you through the inner work of living with more passion, power, and purpose. So to get started with your 7-day free trial, head to the Paths to You website linked in the show notes. And now back to the episode.
And I was thinking about my experience. I mean, I still suffer a little bit from FOMO. And, you know, like if I feel like I'm missing out or I feel like I haven't been invited somewhere, sometimes I'll be like, oh, why wasn't I invited? And it's, you know, it's juvenile, but it's, I think it's a fairly common and universal emotion that a lot of people experience. And certainly, you know, social media has just magnified that because, mm-hmm. you know, you're watching everybody's highlight reel and you're seeing, I mean, I'm thinking, as I sort of reflected on this, I was thinking about my experience as a teenager and perhaps times when there was a party or a girls gathering, and it's hard to remember these, they hold no charge for me, but you know, knowing that I definitely did experience those feelings that all teenagers feel of being left out or whatever it might be, you know, but not really, or sort of maybe having a hunch that maybe your friends were catching up without you or whatever, but not really being able to see it or know it. But for adolescents or anybody really that just has to deal with seeing that, you know, like it's
totally, what I mean. These platforms are magnifying and amplifying all of the shadow
yes.
feelings that we experience. And like you said, we would have experienced these similar emotions on a smaller scale when we were in high school. But like you said, you wouldn't have to face the images of all your friends or, you know, girls in your year group having fun at this other party or whatever it is.
Mm.
It's just really intense, isn't it? Especially when your self-identity and your self-worth aren't fully formed yet. You're in a really vulnerable time.
Yeah, and also it's so not real. I mean, I think that's also so problematic, and we've obviously talked about that in terms of body image and, you know, filters and things. But, you know, like I know people that have had the most toxic and horrible and problematic relationships that are posting, you know, photos of themselves, you know, loved up sort of, you know, it's just, it's not real. But that's, but that image can trigger someone else to compare their relationship and feel less than.
And yes, it's problematic because those type of images are what get the most clicks, the most likes, the most engagement. And in a way, you get rewarded by the app and by your peers for posting pictures that are, you know, idealistic, even if it's not true. It's almost like we're valuing the image or the perception more than the truth of the situation. And I know there's like probably loads of cool people online that you can follow that are very authentic and very real. And again, it's like we have to take a responsibility a little bit for who we follow and really curate our feed so that, you know, if you notice that someone is continuously posting these idealistic images that don't feel authentic to you or are triggering or, you know, causing that comparison complex, then just hit unfollow.
But, you know, like personally from my own personal experience with this sort of tug of war, love-hate relationship that I have with socials, and I think you're the same and I'm sure we've had this conversation many moons ago, for me that, you know, I do need, or maybe I don't need, but I have a narrative running that I need engagement with my posts, and certainly a lot of my clients come from Instagram and they might meet me, but they get to know me. They might follow me before for a year and sort of get to know me, so to speak, like virtually.
It's a trust builder.
But, you know, the photos that get the most engagement, which is good for my business, and I run a business that I love and that I feel gives back to the world and is fulfilling for me, so I want to keep doing it. The photos of me that the photos that, that get that engagement are photos of me and also photos of me and my son and photos of me and my husband and my son. And then there's a part of me that doesn't want to really, I feel narcissistic actually. Like I don't actually want to just spam my feed with photos of my head. To be honest, I don't think I'm that attractive and I'm not. But that's the ones because the people that follow me, they're following me, right? So they want to see me. But it's really hard because I know that other people that like my friends and family are like, oh, my God. Well, actually, I don't know this for sure, although my brother has told me. so he definitely does think this. But, you know, they think, oh, my God, stop spamming us with pictures of yourself, you know.
So, tell your brother to unfollow you.
Oh, he has. No, he
you
has.
You don't need his bad vibe.
No, he unfollowed a long time ago. He finds following me extremely triggering.
Triggering? That's so funny. But, yeah, it's true. Like, if you're not – maybe if you're a, you know – I don't know what the proper word is, but if you're a normal user of the platform, maybe you don't realize as much that when you're running a business or using social media to support your business, the photos that I post that don't have my direct face in them literally get like 10% of the engagement that a picture of my face would get. And the algorithm favors faces and it also favors smiling faces. It's
I didn't know that.
So intelligent, you know. It knows. It knows what you're posting and it knows what people like and what they engage with. And well, so it's kind of like if you want that post to get seen or you want it to, you know, if you want the information to get across to your followers who have, you know, opted in to follow you and to receive your content, then you need to pair it with a smiling, cheesy picture of your head. Otherwise, no one sees it.
It's so true. And that's challenging, right? Like it's challenging. I know that we've spoken about it before. It's challenging for me. I mean, I would prefer to not post any pictures of myself. But it is the game that we find ourselves in and it is a tool. So that's sort of one of the, definitely, you know, one of the ones that I struggle with in terms of my relationship with myself.
Well, in the old, you know, print media days, the amount of money that we would have had to spend if we were, you know, running the same kind of business back then, we'd have to, yeah, allocate so many thousands of dollars to a tiny little print ad at the back of the magazine. And we can't deny the, I guess, if there is a benefit, the way that it has enabled people to connect in that way and for businesses to really speak directly to their customers. Like the amount of advertising dollars that that would have cost is just out of reach for most small businesses. So, yeah. But if you're a normal person, again, like if you're just using that for social networking and for fun and for your personal life, then it's quite different.
Yes, definitely. So, Mandy, tell us about how social media is impacting on our soul, because I know that you have lots to say about this.
I don't know if I have lots to say, but I think we can't deny, of course, there's the effect on our physical and mental health, and our spiritual health is part of that as well. It can't be separated. And so all of the time in our day that we're not spending in ways that are truly fulfilling to our soul, whether that be like with our friends and family in person, or doing our work in the world, or being in nature, or doing some kind of spiritual practice, anytime that we're not doing that and we're scrolling instead, looking for that same kind of hit that we get from the drug of social media, is pulling us further and further away from our evolution. As you so cleverly highlighted, we're regressing. And if our posture is regressing, then so is our soul evolution, you know, as a species.
We're closing our heart. Like metaphysically and physically, we are actually closing off our heart when
if we go into
over.
That posture, for sure.
Yeah.
And then it's easy to see why sending a shitty comment to somebody when you're feeling depressed or triggered or anxious or, you know, just down on yourself, you're going to project that out onto somebody else in the world, you know.
Mm.
There isn't that heart coherence. There isn't that heart connection there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what we get when we're with our friends, our peers in person. That's what happens when we engage in the electromagnetic field of the heart. So all of our organs have an electromagnetic field around them. The field that surrounds the heart organ, and this is not woo-woo, this is
science,
HeartMath Institute, go and follow them, amazing. The electromagnetic field that surrounds the heart emanates 2,000 times bigger than any other organ. So not double, not triple, 2,000 times bigger. And it extends what they can measure currently, and, you know, maybe it's further, but we just can't measure it yet. But it extends up to 10 feet around our body. So when we are in the same room as somebody or across the dinner table from somebody, we are literally engaging in each other's fields, in our electromagnetic fields. And so even if you're having a heated discussion or a conflict, there is the ability to come back into coherence much, much easier because you're there, you know, your actual physical energy is engaging with one another. And it's the natural state for our subtle bodies to come into resonance. They are always seeking harmony. So I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
But what coming from like the world of Ayurveda and really thinking about this as a basic addiction, which I think it is, I personally think it is, each dosha kind of reaches for addictive substances in four different ways and in different ways. And it's really defined as like any habit or behavior that you can't easily change, that you can't change without it affecting your physical, mental, or spiritual health. And so should I go into it now a little bit about each dosha? So if you're a Vata dosha, if you're not sure what I'm talking about, if you don't know which dosha you are dominant in, you can see on the homepage of my website there's a quiz you can do to find out. So if you're Vata dominant, we reach for addictions, and let's just, you know, we reach in this case to social media to reduce our physical and mental pain. So any, even like pain in the body, like nervous system pain, nerve pain, anxiety, and on the emotional level, insecurities. That's what we're looking to soothe. And it's interesting because usually when we're reaching for addictions, or we're reaching in an addictive way to different substances, whether it's food or shopping or Instagram, we are looking to match our current state, interestingly enough. So if we're feeling insecure, we actually end up reaching for things that bolster that insecurity. In the same way that if you are hungover and feeling crappy, usually reach for foods that are going to continue to make you feel crappy, right? So it's kind of the understanding that like attracts like. And so if you are predominantly pitta, then we reach for substances or, you know, addictions, social media that keep us stimulated, that keep us kind of in that heightened state of ego being stroked and competition and, basically feeling like jacked up. And that can go to like the end of the spectrum to feeling like aggravated and angry. So if you are more in the kapha dosha, you can think of addiction to social media as kind of like comfort food or like a digital pacifier. It keeps us in that state of wanting to be, yeah, passive and kind of numbed out and down. It's like kind of a heaviness. So depending on your dosha, you can kind of recognize like how it is that you're reaching for the social media and what you're using it to soothe within yourself, you know?
I love that. And I think, yeah, if anybody is unaware or unsure of what their dosha is, obviously there's heaps of online quizzes and you've got one as well, don't you, man? So maybe we'll link to your website in the show notes.
But, yeah, I feel like knowing that, we can start to navigate our behavior a little bit better and start to kind of be honest with ourselves. Like, okay, yes, this is an addiction. I'm not able to be, you know, off social for a given amount of time without my mind wandering or my attention span sort of being challenged or, you know, getting bored or whatever. And that shows that, yeah, we're addicted. Cool. We can admit it and then move forward in how we want to actually deal with that addiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love it.
Hello, it's Sarah here, and I'm just briefly interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit more about what I offer. So I've worked with literally hundreds and hundreds of women, helping them transform their health, hormones, fertility, and more. And I absolutely love working one-on-one with women because we're all uniquely different. So if you're interested in learning more about coaching with me, or if you're ready to book an initial consultation, you'll find the link in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.
So I think we might slide into recommendations, although I feel like you've just given us great recommendations. But shall I kick the recommendations and then you can slide in with your second recommendation?
Yeah, we'll also like unpack for us how you personally manage it on a day-to-day basis. Like, what do you do?
Well, actually, that's probably my recommendation. So yeah, what I have done, as soon as I found out about screen time limits on the iPhone, which was probably about a year ago, I started to set limits around my apps. Now, I think a lot of mine is around time of day, so they all switch off, so I can't use them. I mean, not that I would, because I go to bed at 9. but they all switch off at 9 and then they don't switch back on until 6 a.m. So that's just like one thing that I'm locked out. I mean, you can obviously unlock and get yourself back into the app, but as a general rule, at least I'm locked out of doing any nighttime screen scrolling if, you know, the desire took me, which it doesn't anyway. But the other thing that I have done is just, and I actually, my recommendation, and I don't do this because I find that I can actually control it really easily. But my recommendation is to set a timer. So I know a lot of people say that they might need to go onto Instagram for something, whether it's shopping or research or, you know, posting for their business or whatever it might be. A lot of people do have sort of a valid reason that they use it as a tool now, but it's so easy to just look down and then look back up and it's been 2 hours and 45 minutes, right? And that is a total waste of our time. And I don't think that we feel good. And that's another thing we haven't really touched on, but we've sort of talked about it around health is, you know, like just sort of back to conspiracy theories part two, like, do you feel, how do you feel like scrolling Instagram? Do you feel expanded? Do you feel happy? Do you feel like, how do you feel when you go to the beach or you go for a bushwalk or you have a meaningful catch up with friends or family versus how do you feel when you're scrolling through whatever social media platform you're scrolling through? How do you actually feel in your body? Because, you know, speaking from personal experience, I don't feel good. I can feel the rounded shoulders and I can feel that I don't feel good about myself, whether it's because I'm looking at other people's, you know, shinier lives or whether it's because I have high cortisol levels. So I think if you need to use the platforms, I really think it's worth investing or not, sorry, investing, but setting a timer for yourself and being strict with the timer. Because, you know, it's just going to stop you, especially with the more modern versions of social media platforms. Like, I'm personally not on TikTok, but TikTok is actually the worst because it's, you don't even get to decide whether or not you want to scroll anymore. It scrolls for you. It just keeps going and it doesn't, you don't get to decide.
Or famous stories on Instagram.
Yeah, I suppose with stories or reels maybe.
I don't get reels in Indonesia.
Reels is like the TikTok version. But there's something about the TikTok algorithm.
Well, yeah, you can be so passive.
It's even more addictive because you don't have any agency at all in terms of whether or not you're watching what you're watching.
You're not actively opting in.
No, you're just being served whatever. and what you're being served is based on, you know, what they think you react to. So I think that those are the main ones for me is like setting screen time limits and setting a timer and then, you know, being strict with that.
I do think as well, though, it's like what you said, like, you know, many people need to use the apps for one reason or another. I would question if that is really a need or if that's just our addictive tendencies. You know, like we don't need to shop 24/7. We don't need to research 24/7.
No.
We really don't. Yes. Like just think, oh, the shops are closed at 5 p.m. Like you can't or, you know, I mean, that's probably a silly example, but I just think these are all excuses that we give ourselves to continue.
It's the addiction.
Yeah, it's the addiction.
It's the addiction.
Like,
yeah.
Let's just be honest with ourselves. Like, oh, I'm addicted to shopping on Instagram. I don't need to do it. I'm not obliged. And even like from the business perspective, the feeling of obligation, like I need to post or I need to engage or I need, no, we don't.
Yeah.
This is just all it's just all a manipulation on the way that we perceive the apps. We're not in any way obliged to use them. Like, full stop. We're just not. There's other ways to communicate with people. There's other ways to build your business. And if you are noticing that the social media platforms are a problem or an addiction that are impacting your health, then find other ways. Like, draw that line for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh.
No,
to get my period.
I think, you know, the line that I have mostly drawn for myself is, I am still posting, but I literally post, I might scroll like one or two thumbs and then I get off. Like,
and I think the funny thing is, the less that you use social media, the less that you engage, the less engaging it becomes.
100%.
Like, when you're on there a lot, like every day, multiple times per day, it kind of gets to a point of thinking like, oh, it's really interesting in here. I wonder what's happening in here. Oh, I wonder what will be happening, like, if I refresh. But if you're not in there very much, it's like, oh, two thumbs of scrolling and this is boring as batshit.
Boring, totally. And the other thing that I did is ages ago, I set up a personal account because I have a business account. And, you know, under the guise of like, this is a really good excuse, I think. Like, I need to, you know, keep abreast of what everybody's doing, like my friends and family. And I don't, you know, need to do that while I'm on my business page, which is, you know, following other health people and whatever. Mm-hmm. And now I sort of have a blanket rule that I don't even go onto my personal page. And, you know, if I want to find out what is happening in someone's life, guess what? I can call them. I can like go for a walk with them. I can go out for dinner with them. I can go have a wine with them. I don't need to look through their highlights reel to find photos of, you know, highlighted photos of their best moments. So I don't need to keep abreast of all of my friends and family through Instagram. I'd rather have a meaningful human interaction with them. And if I'm not having a meaningful human interaction with them, then I don't need to see what they're doing every week. And that's what I got to. Like, and maybe that's another just sort of recommendation that has sprung forth is, you know, do you really need to see? Because for a lot of people, if social media is literally social, like how many people are you following that you literally haven't spoken to, texted, caught up with in like 3 years? Why are you still following that person?
Mm.
Because I bet that there's pictures that they post that are either annoying, are spamming your feed, or are triggering some of those emotions that we talked about.
Yeah, which goes back to like, is there a genuine relationship there?
Yeah.
Or are we just, entertaining one another?
Exactly. So what about you? You've got some cool little strategies that you employ.
I guess so. Business-wise, I do Planoly, and I did this from when I had the yoga studio. So it was kind of, I guess, ingrained in me that I would just do all of my posting work on Mondays and, you know, kind of go in there, schedule it all in, and then that's it. Then I don't go in the app any more than that. And, you know, of course that can give and take, and sometimes I'm more organized than other times. But, like, when I had Sage, for example, I scheduled posts for, like, more than 6 weeks ahead because I didn't want to be on the app and I didn't miss it one bit. but I think the best tip I have for literally everyone, which I think is how I kind of started – distancing myself from the personal engagement with that, is starting to delete it on a monthly basis according to my menstrual cycle. And we probably touched on this way, way back in the periods episode, which is probably like episode 3 or something in this podcast. So scroll back and listen if you want. But yeah, on the days leading up to my bleed and the, you know, 3 or 4 days that I actually have my period, I don't use any social media, and I just either delete the app or, I mean, sometimes I just don't bother opening the app. I don't really feel like I need to delete it anymore. But yeah, deleting the app on a monthly basis and just having that space, because also what happens in that autumn week or the week leading up to the period is the inner critic gets very loud or you know, maybe it's different for everyone. Maybe other people want to delete it around like the spring week, the pre-ovulatory week, because that can be a heightened time of anxiety for some people. So it kind of, I guess everyone experiences it differently, but I think, yeah, having that space on a monthly basis and it's just like scheduled in, it's just something that, you know, you don't question or think about. Yeah, I think that's a really easy and liberating thing to do.
I love that. Well, I think we've run over an hour, so I think that that might be a wrap.
Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the Elevate podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review so we can keep bringing these conversations to you all.